Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. There are many men and women in the church who struggle with all forms of sexual brokenness, including same-sex sexual desires. So how can Christians love and care for those who want freedom from such besetting sins? In today's episode, our guest is Gary Ingram. Gary is the co-founder of Love and Truth Network, a ministry that equips church leaders in restoring biblical sexuality, community, and identity through personalized leadership training, teaching resources, and experiential growth opportunities for personal transformation and supporting others. Gary shares his own story of same-sex brokenness and how God drew him out of the dark and into the light. He also shares how God called him into ministry, especially ministry to pastors, and trying to help them with their personal sexual struggles, and also how to address sexual sin and hope in the local church. Finally, Gary has a new book entitled, Am I Gay?, which highlights his story and how to navigate sexual confusion with the truth of Christ and the community of fellow Christians. To learn more about Gary, his ministry, and the book, visit loveandtruthnetwork.com. For even more resources, visit bebroken.org or check out links in today's show notes. And of course, we'd love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now let's go ahead and dive into today's conversation with Gary. Well, all right, Gary Ingram, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much, Jonathan. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking in our archives and you had been on back in October of 2020 to talk about whether or not, like, can the church actually be a safe place for people with, you know, sexual struggles to heal and all of that. And we'll probably touch on that a little bit more near the end of our talk today. But I would love for any listeners that have been, you know, new with us in recent years and they don't know maybe your story or they haven't heard about your ministry, I would love for you to just be able to share kind of some of your story. And then we're going to talk about a book that you have just recently released.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so our ministry, Love and Truth Network, just passed its 10-year mark. I know we're still youngsters compared to you guys when it comes to that, but yeah, so we're excited about that. And really the impetus for starting this ministry was having 12 years prior to beginning this ministry in 2013, I'd been on staff at a church in the upstate New York area, not as a lead pastor, but on a team of seven pastors, and was one of those. And my final role was as the pastor of Soul Care Ministries, overseeing support groups and recovery programs and all of that. And so I'm kind of backing into my testimony by saying I came to that church back when I was in my mid-30s, and I was just so broken. I had accepted Christ genuinely when I came to faith in him at about the age of 23 or at the age of 23. And even though I grew up in a Christian home, just really came to genuine faith then. And but was really living in a lot of brokenness and sexual addiction, identity confusion. And I had embraced that world, really leaving and rebelling against my parents and the faith that I grew up with. And just could, well, and part of it was rebellion for sure, no doubt about it. But I was also so angry and frustrated because it didn't feel like I kept looking for answers in the church. I kept asking God to take away same-sex desires and those kinds of things. And it just, it felt like I had no place really to turn. Nobody in the church, not only were they not equipped, but they, in most cases, even though they were, these were good men, good people, they didn't really want to deal with any of these issues. And I'm sure had no concept for how big, you know, a few decades later, the issues around LGBT and human sexuality and identity would be. Certainly it seemed like a marginal issue, and it would always be a marginal issue. But I got kicked out of Bible college at the age of 19 because they were concerned about me being suicidal. And I had a lot of emotional struggles in college and leading up to that as well, issues with early pornography exposure, sexual abuse that happened at an early age, not repetitive, but happened and it was significant in my life by some older neighborhood boys. And that leading to just my own struggle with pornography addiction pretty early on, and some involvement later on as I got older as a teen with another boy in the neighborhood, and went off to Bible college thinking, well, surely God's going to meet me here. You know, God, this is going to just go away basically because I'm now pursuing ministry and that kind of thing. And of course, that didn't cure anything. And if anything, again, it just kind of exacerbated the issues because here I'm at a place learning the Bible and studying and getting equipped for some kind of ministry down the road. I wasn't exactly sure at that point what. And I just felt like I was spinning out of control and nothing, I couldn't find those answers, as I mentioned. So when I got kicked out of Bible college, I was, but they just felt like, look, we don't have the mechanisms, the avenues to support someone that we feel like is struggling as much as you are emotionally. And so, you know, you need to find that help and support somewhere. But when I left, I just felt rejected and angry. And I left feeling like at 19 years of age, God, I hate you and I hate your church. And I want nothing to do with any of this anymore. And it wasn't that many more months later that somebody made an offhanded comment that I overheard about a gay bar. And it happened to be in where Cornell University is in Ithaca, New York. And, you know, no surprise that that was there, but I had no idea. And eventually I kept going downtown now that I knew that that was there. And I searched and searched and searched until I found where I thought it was. And eventually I went into the bar at 19, almost 20 years of age, and I felt like I'd finally found my people. So that was a euphoric period of time of throwing off all the constraints and rejecting the Bible and scripture and all that I'd been trying for years to try to figure out and work out, decades even, and so eventually I began to feel this wearing on my soul after a number of months and years. I began eventually to become a bartender at a gay club at a different bar than this one, and because I just had really surrounded myself in this life. But it was the Lord kept wooing and drawing me, and in my anger and bitterness toward him, I kept pushing him away. And eventually, the Lord really, and just in his mercy, severe mercy in some cases, but in his mercy, really put me in a situation that, I mean, I still had to make a choice and surrender, but it was on an interstate in New Jersey at the age of 23 that I finally had a meltdown and surrendered my life for the very first time. So lots of things that I could say about all that, but that in the gist of it, so there's this long honeymoon period. I wound up getting married way too soon to a gal, a wonderful woman, and she had a lot of brokenness. I had a lot more than her, but we shared our stories with each other, and I'd gone through such a honeymoon period, such a radical shift when I accepted Christ genuinely and surrendered my life to him, that I thought all of this was gone. Like the desires were gone. I had such an intense longing to walk with the Lord. And so a year and a half later or so, we were married. And then about 3 years into that, she just decided that she was no longer in love and left. And we separated, and I was miserable. I didn't want our marriage to fall apart. And I kept praying for reconciliation. There was no biblical grounds for divorce. So surely God, you're going to heal this. But when that didn't happen and she divorced me a year later, I was so caught off guard. I was so shocked by the finality of it all. And I was so angry with God again for not doing more to heal my marriage. In my estimation, it was probably a year later when I turned back in toward the LGBT world and got really wrapped up in this again. Now, I was a Christian now, so it was a radically different experience than just having a lot of head knowledge where I knew I shouldn't be doing this and I was breaking my mom and dad's heart, et cetera. Now I've got the Holy Spirit living inside of me, and there was this intense battle going on. I had one foot in the church and one foot in this other place, and it was double-mindedness is a miserable place to be. And eventually the Lord brought me to this church that I wound up on staff at later, but brought me to this church broken, addicted, a mess. And they walked with me, and they got to see firsthand how God was transforming and changing my life over the course of a couple of years. And they wound up hiring me, and that's where I worked for 12 years. And I mean, just amazing grace of God and an amazing heart of these pastors and leaders that knew where I'd come from and yet believed that God was doing something radical in my life and wanted me to walk alongside of them.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you mentioned is kind of when you early on at, you know, 19 or whatever and going to mm-hmm. Bible college, and it prompted a question, and that is, have you seen in your experience in, you know, serving and dealing with churches and trying to minister to the local church at large, that is there a fair number of young men, especially, that maybe feel attracted to go towards some kind of religious service of being a pastor or something like that as a way to, almost like you were saying, hey, if I go here, then these things are just going to go away. Whatever my maybe sin struggle is, whatever my addictions are, do you think there's a fair number of those that are going towards the pastorate who have this idea of that's the route to just sort of take away all these things?
I think that there are probably some who that would be kind of a primary, almost like a bargaining chip, even if they're not feeling that way. But I think more often than not, it's this sense of wanting to serve, maybe God's call. I think there's plenty of people who wind up with ministry that aren't necessarily called to that role, but that's beside the point. But I think it's kind of a secondary thought that, oh, surely now if I go here and I get involved in this, that you know, God is going to show up in a more powerful way, or somehow these desires toward pornography, which it's often pornography, sometimes other forms of sexual sin, that somehow this is going to get better. And then the other, when that doesn't happen, the other false belief is when I get married, right? So Bible college didn't do it or whatever, or ministry didn't do it. But now when I get married, now that's going to fix it all. And of course, that's completely erroneous as well.
So now you work at this church for 12 years, and then mm-hmm. What then led you to then Love and Truth Network and starting that and doing that particular ministry?
Well, that's a great question. I was loving what I was doing at the church. I couldn't even believe that God let me do more than, you know, sweep a floor or something in the church with the way that my life had been and the way that I had turned away from Him in so many ways growing up and for much of my life. So the fact that I got to do anything there, I began as their business administrator, and that quickly moved into beginning to counsel others after a couple of years of training and shadowing and working with other counselors. And then that gave way eventually to this pastoral role of overseeing the counseling ministry and recovery programs. But I, toward the end of that, what was getting stirred up in my heart, I had felt for a long time that I had a heart for pastoring pastors, and I was so embarrassed to even like, this can't possibly be of God. I mean, my life is such a wreck, or was such a wreck, that, you know, what are you even thinking? What a grandiose ideas. And yet that is exactly what I wind up doing now, whether it's training and working with pastors that they themselves are struggling with sexual sin or identity confusion on some levels, or same-sex attraction. Or it's pastors who aren't dealing with those issues, but they want to be more equipped to really walk with people who are dealing with a wide range of things. They want their church to become a truly safe and transformational environment. And so it's just amazing to me that what I sensed way back then, I think, was this call and this nurture of God toward more care of leaders in this space. But that's what wound up really giving way to Love and Truth Network, is realizing, wait a minute, I've received so much from this church. One of the goals of our church, or one of our purposes, not really a goal, was to be a regional resource for other churches. We wanted to kind of give away what God had given to us. And I loved that desire of the church and that purpose of the church. But then it also felt like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be more than regional. And so eventually, yeah, I just, there were some uncomfortable things and some really painful things that also happened at the church in terms of transition. Eventually, I was the only one of the seven senior staff members left with a church of about 1,000 adults, and so there were a couple of years of really hard transition. That, I mean, I say transition kind of in scare quotes, but and eventually I realized, after we brought another pastor on board, that the direction they had in mind versus where we had been and what I had in mind were quite different. And so that really began the thought process and praying with Melissa, my wife, about beginning Love and Truth Network.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the things I've been kind of smiling here is you're talking about, hey, man, I should just be the guy sweeping the floors or whatever. It makes me think of in Ephesians 3, where we're told that our God can go beyond what we can think or imagine.
Yes.
You know, and so I think that's the beauty of grace, right? Is that grace lets us dream again. Grace lets us say, what can't God do with a surrendered, broken, messed up life, you know?
That's right.
And so that's the beauty of it. And that's where we ultimately want to go in this conversation and even in our stories. But you've gotten to a point now where you've written this book entitled, Am I Gay? Mm-hmm. So talk about the journey of getting to the point of actually finally writing this and what is this book all about?
Sure. So the idea of writing a book, I just immediately dismissed for a long time. First of all, I hate the process of writing. I feel like the end result of some of my writing is satisfying and decent, but I just don't like the process very much. I'd much rather be out talking with people and getting to know people and relating to people. So that was a challenge in and of itself. And also feeling like, oh my goodness, there's so much material out there now. Good material. There's a lot of kind of junk masquerading as Christian, but there's such good material. And do I really have something to add? Well, I felt like, yes, in the end, God was kind of prompting this. And the other thing, in terms of the title, I had a couple of other ideas in mind for the title. And my editor and I were talking about this back and forth a little bit. And then one day she said, you know, Gary, I was doing some research or came across an article, I think it was, that was saying that the question on Google and some other search engines that is exploding and has been for quite some time is that question, am I gay? Question mark. And so I thought, well, my goodness, I mean, there you go. I mean, why not name that big? I mean, that was a question I had for so long myself and something I wrestled with. So we just felt like, yeah, that makes sense to name the book that. Of course, the subtitle is this idea of coming out of both cultural Christianity, which I was steeped in, and missing the real thing in many ways because of that, as well as LGBT identity into genuine faith in Christ.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, unpack a little bit of maybe what are some key points? Like, what do you want the reader to gain? Like, obviously, they would assume when they open that book, you're going to supply with some answers to that question. Like, how do you come to a conclusion around that particular question if that's the question you're struggling with?
Right. Well, the book begins with the first chapter talking a little bit about my mom and dad's history combined, because I'm a big believer that it's out of our brokenness or out of our wholeness that we parent, that we live, that we relate to other people. And so it's important to have a little bit of understanding of, or maybe a great deal of understanding about our own history and our family of origin that we come out of. And then the next four chapters are based on the kind of four primary stages of development through adolescence and how, and so I talk a little bit, that's a little bit more clinical in a bit, but then combined with my story too. And then after that, I'm just writing about my story from then on and, you know, different issues. So I really just want, I try to write wanting to be very vulnerable and some might even say raw, but what I also did not want to do is write in such a descriptive way that it actually would be stumbling or that kind of thing. So I didn't do that, but I wanted it to be really vulnerable and clear as to what kind of depth I'd gone to and what the wrestlings and the musings and all of that. So I'm really hoping that people who read it, who are wrestling, will connect with the vulnerability and the genuineness of it, and pastors and leaders will also understand what was, and moms and dads too, like what was helpful. First of all, there's lots of things that were not helpful that the church did, and but the church, ultimately God used the church to rescue my life. So what did the church do that was incredibly important in my journey? So I'm actually working on a second version of this, or a second book. This first one goes through my genuine conversion at 23 years of age and kind of stops there. And then, but there's a lot more story to tell and a lot more to talk about in terms of ministry that'll be in the second book.
So let's talk a little bit then about, you know, where the church may get some things really wrong on not just this topic around, you know, homosexuality or LGBTQ issues, but just sex in general, you know, where does the church get it wrong around even the biblical understanding of sex? And then maybe we can also talk about where they get it right, because you talked about how, mm-hmm. hey, it was through the church and in the church that you were rescued. So let's talk first about where the church is missing it on this whole topic of LGBTQ, sexuality, identity, all that.
Well, and I think it starts at the earliest of ages. I think we oftentimes assume that kids are kind of good to go until puberty, or, you know, you have to have the conversation at some point, hopefully before then. Not all kids get that conversation. And then oftentimes the conversation is so weird and awkward that they're sitting on my wife's, you know, her counseling office, kind of processing some of the trauma of that, or somebody else's counseling office. But the thing that I think is so vital for the church that the church has not historically done a great job in is really helping parents understand, and dads in particular. I think fatherlessness is one of the biggest issues in our culture as well as in our churches, even when dads are present in the home, but they're emotionally absent, oftentimes caught up in their own addictions or whatever, or just distractions, whether it's work or other things, and they're not conscious of this key thing, which is every child needs a mom and a dad, but a dad especially, to shepherd their hearts. And what I grew up in was in a culture and a family system, and I understand why my dad didn't have any other ideas about this either, but where it was all about image management and behavior management, mostly behavior management. So if you behaved a certain way, if you didn't seem to be doing anything wrong on the outside, you were good to go. But there was never any questions or dialogue or just kind of shared time around helping me or my siblings kind of open up from their heart and kind of know what, because I had all kinds of doubts and questions and fears very early in life. I mean, very much so. And so that's one of the things I would say is the church needs to recognize how much children and even adults need differently, but need to have their hearts shepherded. And it's not all about just what is happening on the outside. So that's huge. And equipping parents, particularly now, so much more volatile and difficult in this age that we're living in currently than when I was growing up. But the need for parents to know how to navigate and really pour into their kids a good and solid sense of their identity as boys and girls and God's intention for that. It's a glorious thing. It's a beautiful thing, et cetera. And then also, how do we help kids navigate over the course of a long and ongoing conversation about identity and God's image in us and all the positive things related to that, and that it's good to be a boy, it's good to be a girl made in God's image, and that sense that mom and dad give and other important caregivers give of the goodness of that child. The church should be teaching and equipping parents. You know, we used to have parenting classes, but many of those never really spoke to the issue of shepherding the heart of a child. And they were, again, managing more of the outer behavior of things. And so that's huge. And then also getting equipped. You know, I've talked to so many pastors who've gone to seminary, finished seminary, and they have had zero courses in human sexuality. And very few courses that relate to spiritual formation and sexuality or identity. So there's just a lot more that needs to be said. We also need, as the church, to stay away from, frankly, dumb and trite statements that do not serve any kind of they're not helpful offerings in helping to stabilize somebody in the good of who God made them to be, or helping them to gain some solid ground under them with regard to God's call on their life or who they are in Him or any of those things.
What might be some of those dumb or trite comments that get thrown?
When it comes to homosexuality, for example, one of the traditional ones, well, God made Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, or one that's even more common that I heard all the time growing up, and I sometimes hear now is, oh, well, we hate the sin, but love the sinner. And I've really encouraged churches, while that statement can actually be true, it can be, more often than not, the truth is we hate the sin and we hate the sinner, because the truth is you wouldn't want to spend 2 seconds with that person. So stop lying and saying that you actually love the sinner as well. So honestly, we should be praying that God really breaks our heart for the struggles, the confusion, the pain, and the roads that whether it's LGBT or it's just this kind of nihilist and open, you know, boundaryless confusion that's going on in our culture in all variety of sorts when it comes to sexuality and identity, we should be praying for God to really break our hearts and show us avenues of how we can be an instrument in his hands in really securing them and helping them get anchored to the one who created them and the one who gave his life for them.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the key things, or maybe what are some of the things you've seen in your own experience in dealing with a lot of churches? What do you think are some of the key reasons that churches aren't doing very well in this area? Like, what are some key factors that you see that say, these are some major reasons why they don't lean into teaching parents this, or they don't lean into this longer, you know, sort of ongoing 18-year environment conversation with their kids about identity? What are some of the reasons that you think churches struggle to lean into that?
Well, just to name a few, the basic issue where pastors and others are actually struggling with their own form of sexual brokenness, that's pretty, you know, you really can't lead where you yourself haven't been. And so there's a lot of compromise that results from that. But even in places where that's not the issue at all, the pastor is not dealing with sexual brokenness, the idea of equipping men, for example, in how to really disciple each other, and men, how can men really live in space that's vulnerable and transparent with one another? Because most Christian men's groups are not that way. We are, you know, an inch deep and a mile wide. And so I think that's one of the things that was so helpful. I know one of the things that was so helpful for me about this church that I wound up at and later on staff with is that I got involved in their counseling program right away. I got involved in a small group right away. And then eventually, several months in, God opened up the opportunity to get involved in their men's group, which is the last place in the world I wanted to be. I mean, I went there kicking and screaming, not wanting to be. And I grew up around Christian men. I felt shame, rejection. I could never measure up, or I didn't feel that way. And it was pretty clearly communicated at times. And so I thought this was going to be a horrible experience. Well, it was challenging, but these guys were amazing. And the way that God used them in many ways to refather this mid 30-year-old guy was just, and they had no clue of what they were doing. And I didn't know what God was doing in the midst of it. But the end result was that God was really reforming and reshaping me more into this true masculine individual he created me to be through these guys walking with me for a number of years. And so, but I think that's one of the reasons we're resistant is because we do not know, it has not been modeled for us what it looks like to have a healthy church environment. We have lots of great programs, and I think we should be looking for great programs, but when you bring great programs back into a broken environment, meaning most of us in the church are living double lives. Let's just be honest. I mean, whether it's sexual brokenness, and there's lots of that, or it's a food addiction, we're running to the pantry to get our needs met, or it's chemical addiction, or it's social media, or fill in the blank, binge watching Netflix or whatever. Whatever it is we run to and turn to, we all have bents toward particular sins. And when we're living in that space, we're turning to those things for some counterfeit intimacy, especially sex, rather than the true and deep connections that we need, like a David and Jonathan brotherhood kind of connection or sisterhood kind of connection.
So what are some things, you know, I know it's we can pick apart all of the flaws in the church, because guess what? The church is made up of flawed people, right?
Including me.
But is there anything that you're seeing the church get right around this issue?
That's, again, great question. And I agree that the church is doing a lot of things right around this issue. I think people are becoming more aware, leaders and just people in general are becoming more aware about the need to love people who are struggling no matter what they're struggling with. Then the question becomes, what does it mean to actually love biblically? Because there's lots of Christians who are quote unquote loving, but they're not, according to 1 Corinthians 13, verse 6, love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. And we have a lot of Christians who are getting kind of sloppy about that because they think they're loving someone when in fact, no, you're affirming sin, not loving the person biblically. So we have to be really careful about that. I think examine ourselves. Are we doing that well? But I think definitely the the fact that we're talking more about it and we're hearing more testimonies about whether it's LGBT or it's just other testimonies in general, overcoming abortion and forgiving oneself for that, or again, alcohol or drug addiction, those hearing those stories, the church is beginning. One of the things we talk a lot about is the church has stopped talking amongst itself in good ways when it comes to our stories and giving God glory for what he's done in our lives and giving other people hope. But I'm seeing that more and more we're starting to do that again, and it needs to continue because that story, that narrative is, you know, I mean, Revelation says we overcome him, Satan, by the blood of the Lamb and the word of our testimony, and we really help one another overcome there too. And I think just teaching in general, I've heard some amazing, our pastor did an amazing job of doing a 3-week series on sexuality and hit transgenderism, talked about transgenderism, talked about LGBT, and did a beautiful job of really threading the needle in terms of really full of love, lavish compassion, but absolute truth from the scripture. And on those issues, that can be a challenge to thread the needle well. But so I'm hearing more and more of that happening. And then also the desire, we discipleship isn't just this didactic, this is what I got when I was a kid, by the way, it's just hearing theological truths, which is a big part of it. But there was no life on life. There was no real discussion. There was, again, no shepherding of the heart. And I think we're understanding more and more that people are needing that that nurture and that discipleship that is more life on life and mentoring and coaching. And I'm seeing more of that happen. And in what's part of what's happening there is this God-given longing to be loved, to have relationship, to be deeply known. And also because I'm deeply known, deeply loved, even in my flaws, because I think that that's beginning to happen more. We need that reservoir of relationship to help us be filled up enough to, well, let me say in the converse, when we're empty and sexual temptation comes or some other form of temptation comes, it's so much more difficult to say no to it when we are relationally or emotionally starving than when we actually have an overflow.
Yeah. And one thing I would say, and I think we're saying this just in two different ways, is I think where the church can really get this right is when they keep the gospel central.
Yes.
And they make discipleship whole life.
Yes.
I've seen sometimes where I've seen so many guys get discouraged in their own personal transformation journey is when they finally get the courage up to tell their pastor or something about, like, I got a porn problem, or I'm struggling with same-sex attractions or whatever. And they are immediately, without context, given a referral to a counselor.
Yes. Yes.
Almost as if to say, that's not actually part of discipleship here. That's something that's special. That's unique. You got to go outside of this.
And you're uniquely broken.
Discipleship is whole life, right? We're not right. Segmented into these broken pieces.
Yes.
I know in our last few minutes here, I'd love for you to be able to help our listeners and viewers who are saying, I know some people that I would like to minister to. I think I'd love to be able to help my church even engage this even more deeply than what they're doing right now. What are some practical next steps that our listeners could take in order to try to, you know, help their church or help themselves or others kind of move forward in this area?
I think it's really important to say, first of all, love the motivation, love the heart behind that. The first thing I would say is check your own sobriety and in your own walk. And if you're wrestling and struggling, sometimes we avoid our own stuff by trying to help others. And that's not uncommon. That happens a lot. Or for whatever reason, we don't have a lot of time to get into it. But I think check yourself and get the help and support that you need to become really solid and really secure. And find that band of brothers or that band of sisters to gather around you, those three or four others that need your support, you need their support, you're doing life together. That's really critical. And then get equipped, you know, tune into good podcasts that are dealing with these issues, find good, solid resources, great books, great teaching on these topics, and really learn some things. Read people's stories of coming out of these, you know, whether it's pornography addiction or it's LGBT. Find good stories, and there's lots of resources on our website. I'm sure that you guys have some great resources available too. Find those and immerse yourself in that information. And And then and reach out to ministries where maybe there's a mentoring option or opportunity locally or maybe online where you can be trained and equipped personally to, again, deal maybe with some of your own issues, but also get more equipped on how specifically to walk with others too. I'd say those are also when it comes to coming to your church, that's critical. When you approach your pastor about some of these things, do it with a heart of humility. I know what it's like to stand in front of the service and somebody bring up their great book that I've got to read by next week, and you just get inundated with that kind of thing a lot. You're dealing with death and burials and marriages and just a whole wide range of things that most people are not even thinking of. And so when you approach your pastor or pastors or teams, do it with humility, but also do it with some strength in terms of being certain of what you're bringing, bring some good resources. But most importantly, offer to be part of the solution rather than the expectation that they're going to pick up something now and run with that. You be part of that solution and offer that to your pastor and your leadership team.
That's so good. Well, speaking of resources, Gary, how can people get connected with what you guys have, your book? You've got a podcast as well. How can people get connected?
Yeah, so our ministry name is Love and Truth Network. So one of the ways of keeping that in order, a lot of people say truth and love, but Love and Truth Network, and our tagline is Leading with Love, Anchored in Truth. So it's just loveandtruthnetwork.com is our website. You can do a /, and podcast that'll take you to the video or audio on our website, but our podcast is on all the major platforms as well under Love and Truth Network. And then our book that's out is available right now on Amazon. It's been out for a few weeks, called Am I Gay? Type in my name after that, at least my first name, G-A-R-R-Y, Gary, and type that in afterward, because otherwise a whole lot of garbage pops up. So yeah, those are some of the ways of getting connected. You can always reach out to us too and schedule a time to chat with me if there's any interest in doing that, if you've reviewed the website and checked out on what's out there.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. I tell people that with our podcast, Pure Sex Radio, too. I always say, type the whole thing and then put my name in, because if you just put pure sex, that's probably not a good search to do, you know? So, well, Gary, congrats on 10 years. Thank you for being in this space for that long. A lot of people don't make it to 10 years in this kind of ministry. So thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a joy. Thanks, Jonathan.
Yeah. Well, listeners, we're going to put all those links that Gary mentioned about their website, the podcast, all of that. I highly recommend go grab a copy of the book. Go look at what they're doing to try to help churches really engage this topic well. We also want to help you take your next best step, whatever that may look like. So please reach out to us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.